Hush.
Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on his cypress knee, and he was talking to Moccasin Joe. Well, the party gonna have out in the St. John's swamps. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Biscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Hey, this is Chris. I'm filling in for Tom, and we're going to be talking a little bit about Palm Springs today, ladies and gentlemen. We apologize. Our favorite host, Tom Biscardi, the man, the legend, he's not going to be here this evening. He's out on business. So we are going to be talking about the phenomenon of Sasquatch being in the Southern California desert areas, places that most researchers wouldn't be thinking that these things would show up. Who do we have online tonight?
Okay,
there you are. I can barely hear anybody. Who do we got on tonight?
Jonah's here.
Jonah, how you doing?
Good, brother.
What's new? Anything new over in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, I just got enrolled and accepted into
National University out of San Diego today.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
What are you going to be taking?
I'm working on my MBA in Homeland Security.
Ah, my sister does that. She actually works for Homeland Security.
Wonderful.
Yeah, she went to Afghanistan in the Air Force, came back, got in with NSA, same place that Snowden was in, and now she is in Homeland Security, and her detail is human trafficking, which we have a major problem with.
Yes, I heard that is the boss's, the head boss's worst pet peeve, human trafficking.
Yeah. Yeah. No good, man.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm working on my, I want my gladiator plates. I want my customs vest. I'll be a customs agent.
Yeah, we need more of them, that's for sure. No shortage. I mean, we need more. Definitely. Steven, you on here tonight?
I'm sitting right here, brother.
All right. So, Tom's not here tonight. Sweet, are you on? Rocky, anybody? Or is it just us three?
It's just Tom called me earlier before the show tonight, said he was taking off for a week, that he would be back sometime next week, and you know the rest, I guess.
Yeah.
So are we the only three on?
Sounds like it.
Because I know he said he wanted to talk about the deal about the Bigfoot situation that's been going on in, I guess, near the 29 Palms area, which is about 200 and some odd miles north of me.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been seen out there. They've been recorded, documented. They've been documented out there at Edwards Air Force Base. There's a lot of evidence leading to them being in the mountains above Palm Springs. So they seem to go places that I never would have looked, you know. I would never have thought of that being a spot to go, you know, looking.
You see, as I was telling Tom earlier, the only thing I've ever heard close to that was something called the Agua Barago Sandman, known as a Bigfoot in Imperial County, which is down where I'm at, but they only come out here in the winter, and they're no bigger than 5 feet tall, and they're all covered in hair.
Yeah.
That's
so I'm just wondering if it's the same. I'm wondering if it's the same creature.
I'm wondering. Yeah. Curious.
I believe you, Steve.
Well, you know, Rocky was on a while ago, and he was waiting for Chris to come on, and then he just said, well, he was going to go ahead and leave the deal going on. And just as soon as the ditty ended, you popped on. And, I was thinking there were going to be more people out here other than us three. I don't know. Does anybody have the feeder board in front of them?
I don't.
No, I'm in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, see, the feeder board would have all the people's names and phone numbers on it.
Yeah, it would.
But, yeah, okay, so I guess we're the only three, so I'll let Chris go ahead and do it because Chris has more of the knowledge of the 29 Palms Bigfoot thing because, to me, this is the first I've heard of it.
So what I've been looking at, you know, is what I like to do is I tie the old with the new. You know, I like to find Native American legends that go back to that particular area And then once I find something that I can say is definitely in the realm of what we are discussing, then I'll look and see if there's anything on the BFRO, and then I'll tie it together and see if it matches. And there seems to be quite a bit of evidence, like pointing to the, you know, the closest nearest town where people are saying that they're having, you know, experiences up in Palm Springs is Idyllwild. And I looked at Idyllwild, and it's got a lot of cover. There's a lot of trees, a lot of forest. And, you know, there's a river there. I forget which river, but apparently there's this mountain. I forget. It's supposed to be the highest in the southern. It's like the highest. I forget the name of it. It's the highest in Southern California.
Denali?
Around 11,000 feet, a mountain. And apparently its drainage is the Santa Ana River, and there was historical, you know, go back way, way, way back with the Spaniards and the settlers that were in that area were claiming that they've seen these things frequenting around Santa Ana River, which, you know, goes all the way out to Newport Beach, California. And they'd had sightings of things on that watershed probably all the way up into the mid-70s. There was people, you know, there were some kids that saw one, and they were pretty shook up, you know. They talked to law enforcement, and law enforcement was able to tell there was definitely something there. The kids weren't going to just be that shook up over nothing. And so, you know, I was looking at that, and, you know, of course, there's the 29 Palms thing, and, you know, what gets me is, you know, I haven't been, you've been down there in those areas, I haven't really been down that, when I think of those areas, I just think of not a lot of cover, you know, like scrubland, tumbleweeds, you know, basically, you know, Joshua trees or whatever, you know, but I don't see like a whole lot of other stuff out there growing. So it's really hard for me to fathom, you know. I just wrote an article last night about the UFO connection. And, you know, years ago when I first got into this, I really fought tooth and nail over people talking about these things going interdimensional. I fought tooth and nail with them saying that they could have been related with, you know, coming in on UFOs or portals, all that stuff. I really just, you know, I didn't want to go there. I wanted to believe that these things were completely organic, you know, totally organic, native species to our planet, just very elusive. But from what I just, from all the digging, from what I've seen, one thing that's kind of popped out to me is these hand in glove scenarios, and there's more than one. And so, you know, we'll just start with Roger Patterson. I believe it was him. Supposedly there was a letter that somebody in his family found that was dated to 1962, and it talked about him seeing a silver disc hovering in the Hoopa Valley, and through one of the portholes, he saw it like a hairy humanoid, you know, manning the craft. And I thought, wow, that's crazy, because, you know, Hoopa Valley is, it's a hot spot. There's a lot of Sasquatch sightings out there, a lot of them. And the tribe, they don't kill bears, so there's a lot of bears out there, and a lot of berries. There's a lot of food, you know. There's salmon that come up through the river there on the Klamath and all the tributaries that feed it. So, you know, there's elk, there's deer. There's plenty of food, plenty of resources. There's salmon berries. There's blackberries everywhere. There's probably a few other berry species that I don't know of, that, you know, or don't know the names of. But the place is just loaded down. So, you know, it makes sense that these things would be able to settle in a place like that. But the whole silver dish thing hovering in Hoopa Valley, it was like, well, what the heck? You know, hairy humanoid manning the craft. And then if you think it's 1962, well, it was just a matter of years, maybe 7-8 years, and all of a sudden George Lucas is producing Star Wars. And, of course, the co-pilot of the Millennium Falcon is the hairy Chewbacca, which is basically what we would describe a Sasquatch. So how would Hollywood know, you know, like to put these connections together if they hadn't talked to other people that had actually seen this phenomenon? I mean, the idea has got to come about somewhere. I don't think it was just George Lucas had taken some good acid and you know, decided that he was going to write the story. I think that maybe there was some kind of, you know, maybe a sit down at a coffee shop and he overheard somebody talking about what Roger Patterson saw and went, wow, that'll be the basis for part of this script that I'm writing. You know, and then go down to Skinwalker Ranch. You know, the people, the investigators that are out there on the mound on this hill above the ranch, and they basically were talking about this phenomenon. They were watching this orb hover close to the ground, and they watched it open up like this portal thing, and a Sasquatch, they said, jumped out. So there's that. Then when I got to Kern County, when I first moved there, and I took you over to Hanning Flat, the place where they have Rabbit Island, you know, where we were looking around and found those footprints in the dark.
I remember.
You know, with an exceptionally large toe, which did not look right. It was abnormal.
When me and Chris were after, we saw some weird tracks. I mean, I've seen regular human tracks, but these tracks I saw looked like something that their foot was kind of really stretched out. I've never seen a footprint like that in my life.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm looking at this stuff. I'm evaluating what I see. And, you know, before you got there, when I first went out there, I was looking around. I found these tracks and I decided to follow them to where they originated from. And I went out into that meadow, that field of grass, this tall grass that's up like knee high. And there was two circular burnt spots out there, about as big around as a small living room. And, you know, when I was looking at it, I thought, well, I wonder if this was like somebody's burn pile, you know, and I'm expecting to see like some charred wood, you know, charcoaled around in that circular burn spot, but there was none. What was on the ground was this weird corrosion, like you would see on the battery terminal on an old battery, but it was kind of orangish. And I thought, what the heck did this, you know? But my brain was thinking, I wonder if there was some kind of, you know, spacecraft that landed there and out came these things or whatever it was that made those burnt spots, but they were like perfectly circular. And I just thought this was just so odd what I was looking at. And
that's like when me and you went to we took a drive somewhere up, I can't remember the name of that dirt road we took, and we were out there looking around, and I took my gold pan with me to see, you know, or I think the scoop or something like that. And you found this weird rock that had these, looked like a round circular thing in the middle. And it looked like they had these little tiny circulars going around it. It kind of looked like almost like a map of the universe or map of like a star map of some sort. And then when you look ahead of the rock to a mountain, you can see the same circular pattern on a mountain. It just blew me away.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it's really weird, the stuff that, you know, we have. You know, one of the weird phenomenon is tracking, you know, an individual or even a group And then all of a sudden, there will, you can go to the back of the, where they started from, and we can go to the end. It seems like you can go for a while and find these tracks, and then all of a sudden they abruptly stop. Where's the rest? Where did they go? And how did they just stop without leaving any more trace? That part is so weird to me. Another thing that's strange is when I found the whole family unit, the juvenile that was only, and I'm a size 11, my foot size 11, the juvenile, and I'm weighing in at 220 pounds, 25 pounds, and I put all my weight on one foot, and I was able to get like maybe 3/4 of an inch, you know, of an impression in the sandbar. And yet the juvenile that was 5 inches by 2.5 inches wide was just as deep, you know, 225 pounds, just as deep as my imprint. The parent, you know, with the 17 inches, you know, those went 4.5 inches deep. That was a 1,000-pound animal. What are these things made of? You know, are they made of lead? I mean, how is something with a 5-inch track, a juvenile track, going to be just as deep as my 225 pounds? I mean, what are they, what do they consist of? You know, like,
their bone density has to be different, right?
Yeah, it's got to be really different.
Tom did a research thing here. I can't remember when it was. I know it was years back, and him and his team went to somewhere back east to an island. I can't remember the name of the island, but they went to the island, and they found some bone. I guess it was bone or something like that in the ground, and these bones looked bigger than human bones, and they were pretty dense. So I guess the, something that big with all that meat on the body would weigh more. It's like saying, what was it? There was a man, this may not have nothing to do with Bigfoot, but there was a man back somewhere in the 1930s or 1940s. He weighed 1,000 pounds. And they buried him in a piano case or something like that. And he was in the world, what was it, Ripley's Book Records or something like that. So
yeah.
If there's a creature out there that weighs 1,000 pounds, could be 7 or 8 feet tall, their shoulders could be at least, I don't know, 5, maybe 6 feet wide. Yeah, I mean, you're going to make that big, deep impression in the ground.
I agree.
Look at a cow. A cow walks out there in that sand. A cow can, I mean, the cow's feet aren't as big as ours, but a cow can actually make that deep impression where we can't.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got, you know, hundreds of pounds on top of what we weigh, and their hoof marks will go in deep compared to what we do. And, yeah, it's just...
I was out there with Chris. I stood in that sand, trying to make an impression. Hell, I couldn't do it.
Yeah. And it's like, so what are these things made of? You know, I mean, what kind of bone density, what kind of, like, is there blood, you know, like liquid mercury? I mean, what are they made of, you know? Crazy.
Well, how about if they eat all the stuff like a buck grows its antlers and all, you know, year long it eats these minerals, specific ones that they know to grow their giant antlers. So it would all be in all carry-on family, elk, moose, any, you know, male deer eats these minerals to grow the antler. Maybe, you know, this supreme being eats cattle.
I know when I spoke to Tom years ago, Tom told me that the entrails of the animal, because the entrails held more of the vitamins than the rest of the body did. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's people out there that actually eat entrails. You wouldn't catch me eating them, but there's people out there that do it.
Yeah.
If you eat a hot dog or a sausage, you're eating an entrail.
Pretty much.
Casing.
Somewhat. Yes, you are.
Did you guys hear the news about this ain't Bigfoot related, but did you guys hear the news about when McDonald's and what was it? KFC are doing?
No.
I just watched the video on this. They're making printed 3D chicken and printed 3D burgers.
Oh no.
Nice.
Oh God. Not me. No way. I ain't touching that stuff. I don't want to eat a piece of cardboard.
No. No, thank you.
I'll eat it.
Available on your EBT card.
Yeah. Okay.
I just applied for one because I'm so broke.
Yeah.
Well, getting back to the Bigfoot thing, you know, I went online to on Google search to research the 29 home area of Bigfoot. I didn't find nothing on the subject at all. Maybe I didn't put the search in right or something like that. But the only thing I can think of, did they mention how high these features were? Did they mention how wide the shoulders were or anything like that?
Not that I could see. I didn't see anything on dimension as far as that.
Yeah, because, see, the only one I know of, anything near that, when I lived in Palo Verde before I came up to Bodfish with you and your dad, this thing here, down here in Imperial County, was called the Barago Sandman, I guess California's biggest natural park. And it said that the land is now encompassed by the largest state park in California. But in the 19th and 20th century, various desert rats and seekers of fortune roamed the wild here. One local man who requested anonymously was interviewed in the 1970s and reported that he was camped in the Barago Sink area in 1939 when he was accosted by a tribe of giant, upright, walking apes covered with white fur. He said that the creature's eyes glowed red. They were apparently frightened of his campfire and kept their distance. And this was in 1939. Oh, my God. And this is hot down here. What the hell would a Bigfoot be doing down here in this heat?
Right.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, so the man named Victor Stonewolf was exploring the sink in 1964 when he came across a 14-inch long track in the sand dunes. The prints ran in pairs, he said, generally parallel and averaged about 14 inches in length and 9 wide at the instep. Stoney will return to the area several times to make plaster casts and take photos of the prints, but the present whereabouts of these articles are unknown.
Interesting.
I believe Stony Wolf.
Another one was that Harold Lancaster was prospecting in the area in 1968, making his breakfast, when he recalled, "I saw a man walking in the desert. The figure came closer. I thought it was another prospector. Then I picked up my binoculars and saw the strangest sight in my life. It was a real giant ape man." Lancaster said, "I had heard about the screaming giant ape man up in Tolman County that frightened people for a couple of years. Another person and I even went up there to look for the thing. I decided it was a hoax and never expected to to actually see one. The prospector grabbed his .22 pistol and fired some shots in the air. The beast jumped a good 3 feet off the ground, looked straight at Lancaster, and turned tail and I guess ran off. Recent reports from hunters in the upstate New York area have described similar behavior when Bigfoot-like creatures, entities, are encountered. So, wow.
I agree with what Chris was saying, too, earlier is, you know, you were stating, Steve, that you were on that excursion with Chris and he found the Star Rock. And that dates to, like, the Mesoamerica, like Olmec.
Yeah, but
Maya.
He was talking about the Bigfoots flying these ships back in 1962 or something like that. And Star Wars didn't actually come out with Chewbacca back until 1975 or 77, whatever it was, came out. Somebody could have been sitting in a restaurant talking about it, and some guy across got the idea about it and decided to make a movie with it. But it's kind of strange how you see this Bigfoot inside of a spacecraft through the window, and he's all hairy, and then a few years later, they come out with Star Wars, and Chewbacca's wearing like a belt and bullets or whatever in it and all this stuff, and you're thinking, where the hell did they get the idea?
Yeah, he's got a bandolier. You know, it's just weird, and you know, the thing that's strange, you know, I've always believed that Hollywood lets out little tidbits here and there, but they can't really, like, give the whole cat out of the bag for whatever reasons. Maybe they're barred from making a full-on nonfiction, very detailed, you know, movie or whatever about this subject. They always got to dumb it down with some B-rated, you know, type of movie acting and a lot of the gore or whatever, you know. But there's been other people that said that they've watched these things go interdimensional, just like in the movie Predator. Now, go ahead.
Aren't we supposed to go into a commercial break to pay bills? Where's Rocky at?
I'm not sure.
That's Rocky, true. You there? Need to pay some bills.
I heard when Rocky was putting us on the air that he said, he's like, I'm walking out. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe he's not here to press that button. I don't have the button. So we just have to keep on rolling. But, you know, when it comes to this Sasquatch thing going interdimensional, like you have in Predator, I can say that, you know, I did have an experience one night walking down that road in the middle of nowhere up there in Klamath area, and I heard this ruckus going off in the swamp off the side of the highway. And, you know, of course, I'm thinking logical. I'm thinking elk raking its rack on these two alder trees that are rocking back and forth violently. So I'm just wondering, you know, what we're dealing with. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm looking and I see it kind of looked like vapor like you'd see on a highway, on a hot highway. And it was a moonlit night, and I got pretty good visibility. I didn't obviously need a flashlight to walk down the highway. It was probably a full moon. There was enough light to see where I was going without a problem. And I was able to see the swamp, you know, and the trees, you know, all the definition. But when I was looking towards the ruckus, which was probably about maybe 70 yards away, maybe 60 yards away, whatever, you know, it looked like there was like that vapor mirage like you would see on a hot desert highway. And all of a sudden, it kind of stopped, and it almost looked like an explosion of, like, pixelation, like you see on the Predator.
And then all of a sudden I see this line just coming straight at me through the swamp. And it's blowing the grass aside, like 2 or 3 feet apart. And it's coming rapidly. And the only way I could explain what this looks like, if you were to put it in a layman term type of thing, it looks like somebody took an industrial leaf blower, invisible, on and put it on an invisible pulley line aimed straight at me through the swamp. And you know, aimed down, you know, and coming towards me. So I'm watching. It looks like this invisible leaf blower just blowing the grass aside 2 or 3 feet apart. Now, mind you, this night was a calm, still, one of those thick, still nights, 3 to 5 mile variables. You know, I commercial fished, so I know how, you know, what the windage was. It was maybe 3 to 5 mile an hour variables, but not much. It was pretty calm and still, you know, almost like when you have earthquake weather. It was warm, thick, and still. And so I'm looking at this thing, and it's hauling ass towards me, and I'm freaking out at this point. So I took out my biker wallet. I had the little biker wallet back then with the chain on it and the keys. I started swinging my keys. I didn't have anything else on me, a gun or a knife, so I'm swinging my keys, and I'm praying. I'm praying, and I'm running. And as I'm picking up speed, trying to outrun this thing, try to get ahead, I look over my right shoulder as I was heading north on 101, and I watch this thing diagonal to get ahead of me, like to cut me off. Now it's running through the swamp trying to get ahead of me, you know. And so now I'm speeding up, and I'm going, hell no. And as I anticipate this thing hitting the side of the highway, luckily a Simpson logging truck came down off the grade onto the lower part of the highway, because it's built up about 6 feet of gravel because we're in a swampy, a flood zone. And as this thing hit the side of the highway, I was anticipating, I looked down over my right shoulder, and I saw human footprints running in the grass, but there was nothing there. There was nothing there. I didn't see anything. So I couldn't
I believe you, brother.
I couldn't figure out what I was looking at, and as soon as that thing hit the side of the highway, and as soon as I looked down and saw the human footprints running in the grass, it was keeping pace with me. And as soon as the truck came down off the highway and lit up my back, it's like I was so relieved, because I thought to myself, if something happens to me, this guy's going to see it. Whoever this trucker is, he'll see me get yanked off the side of the highway. And so, you know, I'm looking, and I notice, you know, as soon as the truck lights up my back, I see this, what's it called? I see this.
It's called a supernatural phenomenon.
It kind of turned back into... how would you say, like leaf blower mode, like wind. And that, like I said, this was a windless night, so this was the craziest thing I could be looking at. It was just unreal. And I told my friend, who's Native American, what I saw that night, and he said it was a shapeshifter. Now, if these things can go interdimensional, that means they're also a shapeshifter. And it was definitely doing... you know, in the beginning, Sasquatch behavior, not rocking those sapling trees side to side, you know, like a railroad sign that just went up. I mean, it was rocking them. And I've heard of other people have seen that, and then they end up seeing a Sasquatch. So who knows, you know, I mean, I'm just telling it the way I seen it. And I remember there was a guy named Matthew Johnson. He really wanted me to go up to his book signing, you know, up there in Washington, and he wanted me to tell people that that was a Sasquatch, and I said, I won't, because I didn't see it turn from one to the other or vice versa. So I'm just going to, you know, if you want to hear my story, I'll tell it the way I saw it, but I'm not going to alter it so it fits your criteria, because you did see one go interdimensional. Well, that's you. You saw that, but I didn't. I saw something that was able to leave human footprints. It was physical enough for that, but there was nothing there beside me. Exactly.
Yeah. Like an invisible
shield. When I was a kid, and I've told Tom this several times, I told Chris too, was in 1966, I think. That's before the Roger Patterson film came out. My mom and dad had bought a house up in Redding off the Canyon Road, right down the road from the Blackfoot Reservation. And that's where the Redding Casino sits at now. But at that point in time, it was thundering. It was lightning outside. It wasn't raining, but it was windy as heck. And then about maybe 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, every time a lightning flashed through the curtains, I could see this round-looking silhouette, you know, coming through the curtains. And I'm like, what is this thing? So I opened up the curtains, and when I saw these red, beady eyes and the teeth, I mean, as a kid, my God, I was scared. I just closed the curtains. I ran up underneath the bed, and I stayed there all night long because I didn't know what to believe. I mean, we were, you know, my mom and dad were Jehovah's Witnesses and stuff like that. We were taught that, you know, we were the only ones that God created and all this other stuff. And then when you see this thing looking at you through the window, it literally changes your perspective of what you were taught.
Yes, when I was a child, this is no joke. I mean, people blamed it on me having a high temperature or a flu or a cold or anything. But this encounter happened to me at least 10 times in my life. I would wake up and there would be a djinn in my room with a hat, and he was just protecting me. But he made my hair stand up and chills go all over me. But I knew I was safe in his care just because of his behavior. There was nothing threatening, but his power was like so strong, and it was not a dream because I woke up from a dream and out of bed and I'm seeing what I'm seeing in front of my face. It was a definite djinn that followed me my whole life when I was younger. This is like probably 5 to 10 years old, you know. So I believe in good djinns. They exist because my encounters were real, and I experienced it not just once, but I had like multiple visitations from what I call my djinn.
Yeah, I had some Bigfoot sightings in, I think it was 2016, because I went up to do a retake on Chris's ordeal that he had up in, what was it, Big Bend, I think. And I went down onto the, what's the name of that river?
That's the Pit River.
That's right. Pit River. I lived there all my life, and I still can't name all those rivers. Anyhow, down on the Pit River, there's this little deal that you can drive into right next to a boat ramp. There's like a cement house there and everything else. I'm sitting there, and there's something up underneath a tree or a root or whatever it was. It was in the water, and it had its arms crossed. I think it was trying to hide from me or something, and I looked at it, and it was actually a Sasquatch standing in the water. I guess it was pretty big because it was standing in the water all the way up to its hips. From the feet to the hips was covered in water. The rest of the body wasn't. He had his arms crossed, hiding up underneath the root of the tree. And when I saw it, you know, I just said, I'm going to come back to you and get a picture of you. I pulled out my camera glasses, and they were dead. I went back home after that. I turned on the camera glasses, and they had a full charge in them. I couldn't figure that out.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Nice. I have one story like that to back you up, Steve, because I put out my Sasquatch cams way early. My little guy and I started it, and it was great, and then I had a lot of help. And there was this one Christmas present I got, so I saved it. It's a game cam, and it has 6 D batteries, and I got Duracell batteries, and I put brand new batteries in it, and I put it out there, and I only got 5 pictures off of it, and when I pulled it back, there was no battery life. And there should have been battery life for a year. Yet, I got 5 pictures, but I ran another cam behind that, and that's the picture I sent Tom Sr. with the ghost deer coming out of the mist. Maybe that manifestation happened, that it got the battery juice, and then on one night it just started spiritually manifesting. And the game cam, I pulled it back, and there was no battery life. 6D batteries in warm weather got zapped in like 2 months, where they should have lasted a year, because my other game cams I run only are like 4 double A's, and they last forever. So 6D's.
Right. Well, getting back to the 29 Palms deal about this Bigfoot thing, what do you think, Chris? Did you do any research on it, trying to find whether you could find any type of story on it? Because the only time I ever heard about it is when Tom brought it up.
You know, it's hard to I have seen basically evidence that they travel all through the San Gabriels, which was, it's been totally off the radar for me in the beginning of my researching days. I would never have looked there. And they will follow that whole mountain chain all the way down with some desert hills and mountains. And there's a few little watersheds, you know. I just, I know there's a few reports out of 29 Palms. There's a few reports out of, with historical value, with Native American lore in Palm Springs area. There is a lot of activity centered around the San Gabriels, namely around Big Bear, Lake Arrowhead. That's where Claudia Ackley was living. They're all over the place in there for whatever reason. Tehachapi is a hot spot, you know, because it's the end of the Southern Sierras, and that's the transitional area where they will either transition into the Angeles National Forest through the Grapevine, or they'll continue to go straight south along the San Gabriels, which will take them through Lake Arrowhead down to Big Bear. There's you know, what really just struck me, you know, just blew me away was, you know, when I was finding the footprints that I found, they were in a high desert area. I took you out there to the spot, you know. And
remember that, because it was snowing out there. And when you showed me the snow and the prints in it, my mouth dropped and hit the ground. I didn't know what to think.
Yeah, whatever could leave such an impression, you know. I mean, there was a big one that was almost like, when I took you there, I said, hey, Giant, I got something over here. That one must have been 22 inches, you know, and it went in probably 5 inches into the, you know, sandbar, maybe more. And it was just like, what could make that kind of an indention? You know, we don't have camels. We don't have Alaskan brown bears. We don't have elephants here in Southern California.
You got bear there. You got bears, yeah, but they're not that big.
Yeah, you know, your biggest bears are going to push. You know, I did see one that was probably pushing close to 650, 700 pounds on the South Fork of the Kern, you know, by that one bridge where we come from Kernville back to the other side of the lake. We parked at that bridge a few times. And
Not trying to change the subject on that or anything, but did you ever go back to that park ranger when we couldn't find him?
Yeah, I tried 2 times after you had left, and I still couldn't find him. The truck was there, but he still wasn't there. And
maybe he died
inside
the house.
I don't know. It's just creepy, though, to go over there. And then, you know, there's, you know, somebody's there because the car's there, but no one in sight. it's just weird. Where did he go? You know, was he hiding? You know, and I remember
he in the field or is he dead?
Well, I don't know. I just remember the one time I did catch him when he was when he was there on site. He was doing some work on the siding of his cabin, and I asked him, "Do you live on site?" And he said he did. And I said, "Well, do you ever, you know, since you're out here alone all the time by yourself, did you ever experience anything out of the ordinary or strange while staying out here?" And he's like, "Well, what do you mean, like what?" And I said, "Well, maybe like, you know, like rocks hitting your cabin, like little pebbles or whatever." He goes, "Yeah, last night, but I thought it was wood rats." And I was like, "No, no, you know, the wood rats aren't going to throw pebbles at your cabin. But and there's no trees above it for things to fall down on it." So
just me and Chris were out there. Yeah, me and Chris were out there one time. We were walking around. We sat down, and we heard a knock coming from the wildlife refuge or whatever it is. It wasn't that. It was between us and the cabin where the ranger's at in a dark, weird area. It was a knock. But you can tell a knock from a bunch of trees when the wind's hitting back and forth. And then just right behind us, a tree shook and fell. I remember that as plain as day. And when it fell, me and Chris freaked. I was not about to walk off in there.
Right. Steve and Chris, you guys have the greatest encounters. Your stories are amazing. Believable. Oh, my.
Steve and Chris's great adventures, like Bill and Ted or whatever.
Yeah. They're even better than Bill and Ted.
Yeah. I mean, we, when we were sitting out there,
You'd have to be there.
Yeah. We heard this giant, like, it sounded like a whole tree snap and came smashing to the ground. We heard that off in the distance that same day, or maybe the second time we went from when we heard the knock. And after Steve left, I went back out there just to see if that guy was there, you know, the guy that was caretaking the area that worked with the Park Service thing or the wildlife refuge. And
yeah, the ranger.
The ranger, of course, he's nowhere to be seen. It's getting dark. And I must be an idiot, but I decided to go for a walk towards this thicket, and I made it through the first thicket area where these trees are real dense. I mean, they're so dense that even in the daytime, in the middle of the summer, it's dark. There's really no light penetrating the floor that much. I mean, it's just total canopy. And you go through one section, then it opens up to where there's like a little scrub, you know, meadow of tumbleweeds and sage or whatever. And then a new section of really dense cottonwoods. And I walked into the next section, and it's just so dark in there. It looks like it just swallow you up. And I maybe got in there maybe probably about half of a city block, and I heard a snap, and I looked, and then I went, well, maybe that was, you know, just kind of wondering. And then all of a sudden.
Yeah, this is a little off that, but it has ranger in it. I remember when I was in the military, I heard of my commander's daughter actually graduated her ranger school when we were in Friedberg, Germany. And my whole company just had so much love for her. Like, she made it. She has a great last name. And I heard female rangers are vicious.
Oh, bad. Yeah. Yeah.
But I do respect that training and qualifications and to get pinned. Oh, it's an honor. It's an honor.
Yeah, there's it's weird, you know, that day I was walking through there, I'm walking, and all of a sudden a stick came flying at me, and you know, landed probably about 20 feet from where I was walking, and mind you, it's getting dark in there, it's starting to go down, and then all of a sudden I kind of hear something slowly sideline me, and I said, you know what, it's time to go. you don't have a firearm on you, it's time to go.
Yeah, right? Park ranger, Army ranger, Sasquatch, time to go.
Yeah. Time to go.
Yep. Always trust your instincts. You never, your brain doesn't feel, your heart doesn't think, so you always trust your gut, your instincts.
And I tell you what, it's even more weirder is when I was over there, we heard screams even from his backyard at night. Oh, that was creepy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I heard some lady screaming. He heard it, too. And we walked outside, and we're like, what the hell? It sounded like some lady getting murdered. And,
I heard a few gunshots.
Yeah. And I was like, what the hell's going on now? This is just getting out of hands.
I mean, it could have been a Sasquatch making that type of a scream, because Sasquatches have been known to make a scream just like a woman. It's weird.
Yeah.
And black panthers are known when they're in their mating season to cry. They
yeah, black panthers
a crying baby.
Cry like a child.
Yep.
Yeah, we got cougars like that. Northern California does the same thing.
Yeah. And on to your story of that 700-pound bear, Chris, there is a PA state record. I mean, that thing is a bruiser. I mean, the boar, because 700 pounds is gigantic. The skull on those things are gargantuan.
Yeah.
I've seen a 700-pound bear, so yeah, very vicious. Grizzly, cinnamons, or blacks. Mm-hmm.
It's enough to ruin your day, for sure. Definitely, Pennsylvania has got no shortage of those bears. I know that because I've seen them on TV and people reporting them that they got them in the Hamptons or whatever out there. It's a trip.
And the Canadian wildfires brought more of them south.
Yeah.
They followed the natural footpath up there that Mesoamerica formed. It's a giant beaver dam up there in Canada that crosses all past the Great Lakes, big swamplands. But there's a natural path that the wolves and grizzlies and, hey, we used to travel it as native tribes travel that. It's a natural footpath.
Okay.
But that wildfire
track
brought everything down.
That's crazy. That is crazy.
It's true.
That's real shit, man. It's real shit. I mean, just one of those phenomena that we're still trying to, I've got over 15,000 hours of research in on this subject, and I can still say I know nothing. I know a few things, but nothing as to get us to where we can get one. I found a place where they're coming through every December, but, I'm not going to be there this year probably. And I did tell somebody who's a local to go out and check it out and document anything, any changes for me. I'm not going to be there.
Are you still in Diego or San Jose, I mean?
Yeah. But anyways, folks, it looks like it's time to wrap it up. It's 7:59. We got to stop the show before 8 o'clock or we get charged a whole extra, however much it charges us. And
hey,
I don't
Chris
know
and
how
Steve.
As Tom would say, kudos and salutations, America. Next week.
Yeah, good talking with you, brothers.
Thanks for holding the reins together, Steve and Chris.
You got it.
Yeah, I left my phone number on Kristen's page, so.
All right, I'll track you down.
Together.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they die. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legend, tales, and facts. Put them all together, reason for the facts.